Across the Millennia, Applying Know Thyself to Daily Life. Dr. Antonietta Francini, SRC, with benefactor Tacturnus, FRC.
Both prehistorical and historical traditions deal with the art of understanding oneself. This essay examines the Delphic concept that by knowing ourselves, we also come to know God. Modern science and quantum problems associated with the persistence of the genetic code are also aspects of this ancient dialogue from the point of view of Nobel Prize laureate, physicist Erwin Schrödinger. We are invited to ponder how the ancient philosophical teachings about knowing ourselves are applicable to our modern life.
The task of understanding ourselves is the most important and the most difficult in our lives. However, if we do not know ourselves, we go through darkness, uncertainty, and despair. Our life lacks value and meaning. A human life without worth appears to be insignificant. People feel that they are powerless victims of a pitiless fate, alone and abandoned as an autumn leaf in the storm of events. When we finally make the effort of working on our inner selves, according to the ancient injunction, we become, all at once, the investigator, the process of investigation, and the object of observation. What a task! What is the real meaning of the verb to know in this elevated context? I am not trying to solve the riddle, for that is the personal task of each one of us. However, we are presented with the opinions of mystics across millennia of historic wisdom. May their words illuminate our hearts and understanding. It is impossible to establish the epoch when, for the first time, the evolving human consciousness asked the question, "Who am I?" However, we can assume that it was more than 5,000 years ago. Since an answer to that inquiry is engraved in stone in the ancient temple of Luxor, built about 1500 BCE in Thebes, Egypt. The human body is the house of God. That is why it is said, "Know thyself." In the same temple, we also find the advice, "The best and shortest road toward knowledge of truth is nature. Your body is the temple of knowledge." From these sage sayings, we can deduce the teaching that universal truth can be found both in nature and in the human body. Therefore, by understanding nature and ourselves, we can know God. Martinists today still refer to this as studying the Book of Humanity and the Book of Nature. How has this been seen across ages and cultures? For the Egyptians, order and harmony were the true manifestations of the divine. Therefore, we can infer that by finding and maintaining order and harmony in ourselves, we can illuminate our divine essence. We can admire order and harmony in nature and in the whole universe. Humans are part of nature, part of the universe. We cannot be different, nor can we be separated. We must search for the correct and essential aspects of ourselves and not be distracted by the apparent confusion, doubt, and guilt that seizes our superficial ego when we feel separated from God. We should not confuse ignorance with knowledge. The ancient mystics were very precise in their teachings, as in this timeless Egyptian proverb, "The way of knowledge is narrow." In India, approximately during the same prehistoric period, the Vedic tradition was teaching, "Thou art that," meaning that the real self of each human being is identical with the divine universal self of all. Therefore, according to the most ancient Sanskrit tradition, each human is essentially a pure, immortal soul that is permanently related to the one cosmic intelligent power, called Brahman. The Bhagavad Gita says, "With the self unattached to external contacts, they, the knowers of Brahman, find happiness in the self. With the self engaged in meditation on Brahman, they attain to endless happiness. they attain absolute freedom, whose sins have been destroyed, whose perception of dualities are torn asunder, who are self-controlled and intent on the welfare of all beings, with the senses, the intellect ever controlled, having liberation as their supreme goal, free from desire, fear, and anger. The sage is verily liberated forever. From the Yajurveda derives the teaching of the Isa Upanishad. All is perfect, so perfectly perfect. Whatever being lives, moves, and breathes on earth, at every level from atom to galaxy, is absolutely perfect in its place, precise and choreographed. Because that flows from the glory of God, the Lord, the Self, consciousness, the Source, awareness, peace, and love, and is therefore perfect. When you have surrendered your ego to that, you will find true happiness. Never ever envy the place of any other man or woman. A modern exponent of the Upanishads recently emphasized these points in lectures on Vedic philosophy at the Ottawa Hindu Temple. Whether I say thank you or not, the sun shines, the wind blows, the rain rains, and the earth moves. But by saying thank you for their functions in this creation and by expressing my deep sense of gratitude to them, I realize the true nature of my own self and my own function in this creation. The moment I realize myself as one with the entire creation, I find new zest, a new joy, and a new enthusiasm in life. I realize that to make others happy is also my happiness. To serve others and to help them to achieve their life's fulfillment is also my fulfillment. All existence is divine. This means that our essential nature is divine. Life lived without the consciousness of one's divine nature is indeed trivial. It is a life of darkness, of ignorance, sorrow, and distress. It is a life of spiritual blindness. Those who let themselves live in such a spiritual blindness are really hurting themselves. They are called by the Upanishad spiritual suicide. One is always seeking happiness. Why? Because one's very nature is happiness. One is always seeking freedom. Why? Because one's very nature is freedom. One wishes to live a longer and longer life. Why? Because one's very nature is immortality. In other words, what one really wants in life is to only be oneself, nothing more, nothing less. If so, what is that oneself? That one has to discover for oneself, by oneself, through inquiry. That is indeed the overriding purpose of life. So say the Upanishads. One's real teacher is always the self, I, already in oneself. In central Greece, in the sacred temple of Apollo at Delphi, built between the two peaks of Mount Parnassus, the words, "Know thyself," were engraved in stone. This famous sanctuary, where the oracle prophesied, was first built around 800 BCE, and was an important spiritual center for the Greeks and the Romans. However, not everyone understood the subtle transcendent meaning of the injunction, "Know thyself." For example, the Roman poet Juvenal, 1st-2nd centuries CE, in one of his brilliant satires, quotes the phrase in Greek and suggests that the precept descended from heaven because to understand oneself is to understand others as well. In addition, he goes on to demonstrate that the saying may also refer to more personal considerations, such as knowing one's own habits, customs, character, ability to control emotions, and other aspects of our behavior. He shows its importance even for the mundane things, such as shopping and dining. Rightly do I despise a person who knows how much higher Atlas is than all the other mountains of Africa, and yet knows not the difference between a purse and an iron-bound money box. The maxim, know thyself, comes down to us from the skies. It should be imprinted in the heart and stored in the memory. Whether you are looking for a wife or wishing for a seat in the sacred senate, if you are preparing to conduct a great and difficult cause, take counsel of yourself and tell yourself what you are. Are you a great orator or just a spouter? Let people take their own measure and have regard to it in things great or small, even in the buying of a fish, that they set not their heart upon a mullet when they have only a gudgeon in their purse. For if your purse is getting empty while your maw is expanding, what will be your end when you have sunk your inheritance and all your belongings in a belly which can hold capital and solid silver as well as flocks and lands? The different opinions and interpretations of this injunction show that humans have different levels of understanding and evolution. Nevertheless, the statement, know thyself, is useful for all. Some try to purify their personal ego. Others transcend the knowledge of God. Nevertheless, these two processes are fundamentally related, as without full dominion over the mundane personal ego, it is not possible to proceed effectively on the spiritual path. Several ancient Greek philosophers, such as Thales of Miletus, Pythagoras of Samos, Socrates and Plato, as well as the Orphic initiates, interpreted the injunction in the highest spiritual sense and stated, "Human, know thyself, and thou shalt know the universe and the gods." They also pondered on the questions, what should we do in order to know ourselves and God? And is there a secret method available to accomplish this? The prehistoric hero Orpheus was believed to be the musician who perfected the use of the lyre. Orpheus received his musical instrument directly from the god Apollo in the temple of Delphi. The beautiful god Apollo was the leader of the muses and patronized the arts and music. Orpheus, being his disciple, could charm wild beasts with the sound of his lyre, and with the magic of his singing voice, he could coax trees and rocks into dance. In addition to this legend, Orpheus was also said to be the originator of the adaptation of Greek religion known as Orphism. This philosophy understood human nature to be in part divine, a spark from Dionysus, the ancient Thracian god, and in part mundane, taken from the flesh of the Titans, the ancient world rulers who had murdered Dionysus. Orphism stressed a strict standard of ethical and moral conduct, involving ascetic practices and purification. Coming to know itself as divine, the divine human soul could be liberated from its titanic inheritance through initiation into the Orphic mysteries, and through the divine identification now, and also through the process of reincarnation to fully return to its divine origin. Pythagoras, Socrates, and Plato were all influenced by the Delphic and Orphic traditions of what it meant to know thyself. Many methods practiced by the Greek mystical tradition are very useful in attaining knowledge of self and of the divine. Silence, serenity, purification, order, harmony, discipline, music, meditation, chanting, and expansion of consciousness are methods which have proven very useful for human evolution.
Personal intense aspiration, firm desire, and perseverance of the seeker are essential components for attaining real success in the task.
This spiritual way of life can be experienced today in many contexts. The modern Rosicrucian and Martinist traditions reflect this same goal. The fire is still burning, and the flame will never die. The quest for the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding of our life and of the mystery of the universe has changed aspects across millennia, yet remains as elusive as it always was. In our day, science tells us that the building blocks of our physical being are our genetic code. According to modern science, all living beings are the manifestation of their inherited genetic codes. Therefore, Humans are the physical expression of certain types of amino acids and proteins related to each other in a specific fashion in the cellular nucleus. However, it is not clear how such delicate interactions persist, unchanged across millennia. In recent times, a Nobel Prize winner in physics, Erwin Schrödinger, asked the relevant question, "The mere fact that we speak of hereditary properties indicates that we recognize the permanence to be almost absolute. For we must not forget that what is passed on by parents to the child is the whole four-dimensional pattern of the phenotype, which is reproduced without appreciable change for generations, and born at each transmission by the material structure of the nuclei of the two cells which unite to form the fertilized egg cell. A gene contains certainly not more than about a million or a few million atoms. That number is much too small to entail an orderly and lawful behavior according to statistical physics. How are we to understand that it has remained unperturbed by the disordering tendency of the heat motion for centuries? The laws of physics are statistical laws. They have a lot to do with the natural tendency of things to go over into disorder. But to reconcile the high durability of the hereditary substance with its minute size, we have to evade the tendency to disorder by inventing the molecule. Life seems to be orderly, and lawful behavior of matter, not based exclusively on its tendency to go over from order to disorder, but based partly on the existing order that is kept up. Living matter is likely to involve other laws of physics hitherto unknown. These unknown laws of physics must exist because the precise manifestation of living matter is expressed in the genetic code, which does not go over into disorder across ages, argues Schrödinger. Schrödinger speaks about the importance of what he calls negative entropy. For maintaining life and health, entropy taken with the negative sign is itself a measure of order. To reconcile the high durability of the hereditary substance with its minute size, we had to evade the tendency to disorder. It is by avoiding the rapid decay into the inert state of equilibrium that an organism appears so enigmatic, so much so that some supernatural force, vis viva intellige, was claimed to be operative in the organism. How does the living organism avoid decay? A living organism continually increases its positive entropy and thus tends to approach the dangerous state of maximum entropy, which is death. It can only keep alive by continually drawing from its environment negative entropy, which is something very positive. Schrödinger further develops his hypothesis by saying that the living organism feeds upon negative entropy, attracting as it were a stream of negative entropy upon itself to compensate the entropy increase it produces by living. This is theoretically logical and clear, but from where does this negative entropy or free energy come? A brief answer is cosmic energy. Nevertheless, here we must abandon the complex discussions of the scientist Schrödinger to express in a few words what we already know. The same energy that promotes the life-giving phenomenon of photosynthesis is the free energy that we absorb from the light that gives light to the stars. As Einstein explained, E equals mc squared, that is, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. In hermetic terms, we could say, conscious, eternal, infinite light is the source of all. Linking science to the ancient wisdom, we learn that our conscious physical interaction with nature will help us know ourselves, and also to stay healthy, as we actually are that, the conscious I am. As Schrödinger finally concludes, subject and object are only one. The barrier between them cannot be said to have broken down as a result of recent experience in physical sciences, for this barrier does not exist. Schrödinger does not actually speak about knowing God, but he comes closest here. These teachings are very ancient, but perfectly applicable to our modern life. We must grasp the reality that humans are divine, that there is no other happiness but the profound, constant communication and attunement with the cosmic. The self that we must know is the superior self, and not a list of negativities related to the personal ego. We are not the body.
Former Imperator Ralph M. Lewis writes, "Self-analysis. It is because of an intense urge to look upon ourselves, to analyze ourselves and our environment, that we learn to do many exceptional things. Otherwise, we would contribute very little to the advancement of humanity and to the progress of society."
Our natural attributes are mostly within us. Therefore, we are not fully aware of them. We accomplish certain things in life with these powers, but whence we derived them, we are not quite certain.
Self-analysis does more than disclose our attributes. It also reveals our limitations, the things not yet possible of accomplishment by us. It shows how far we are behind those ideas that we recognize as a state of perfection. It points definitively where we need to improve ourselves.
But there is still a second quality, and that is aspiration. Aspiration consists of those sensations and desires and wants of the self as distinguished from the passions of the body. Aspiration finds its gratification in the realizing of a need or some ideal which we have set for ourselves. Though reason in self-analysis may disclose our lack of something, it is aspiration that causes us to seek to fulfill the need and to lift ourselves up and beyond our present status. If we analyze this, five truths emerge. 1. Self-analysis is a natural urge. 2. It reveals our attributes and limitations. 3. It makes us aware of an ideal and desirable state of perfection. 4. An innate aspiration helps us lift ourselves out of routine. 5. It consists of the gratification of a higher ideal. The secret method to know God and ourselves is no longer a secret. Harmony, sacred music, meditation, inner silence, and vowel chanting are tools that help us clear our vibrations from all imperfections. The basic methods of the Rosicrucian path are related to these practices that help our personal evolution. With loving performance of these techniques, we will modify our mundane vibrations into more and more subtle ones. We will finally attune to the divine vibrations and gain the certainty of our real essence. We will merge into great joy, beauty, and profound peace. Nevertheless, we must remember that, according to the literal meaning of the verb to know, the human soul, incarnated in an earthly body, is unable to transmit to human consciousness the tremendous brilliancy of cosmic powers. Incarnated humans cannot fully know God. However, we can certainly know the God of our hearts, with loving, longing, and pure desire. With persistent practice, by refining our vibrations, and by liberating ourselves from useless worries, we may be able to calm the chatting of the brain, and in the absolute silence of a meditation, without an object, we may have a glimpse of the eternal splendor that is our real being. This wonderful experience may happen only a few times during a given life. However, it is sufficient to give us the certainty of our divine ground and of our true eternal life. Such experience is described in sacred texts as illumination, and is a wonderful gift by the grace of God
to the sincere, persistent, and passionate seeker, as revealed to us by the many great mystics of human history. We are grateful to the sages of ancient times for having uncovered the supreme secret in order to give us the opportunity to know ourselves, to grow, and to evolve. We exist in the eternal now. The future constantly converts itself into now, then instantly becomes the past, like a stream rushing down a mountainside.